The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, Bills Mafia? I'm your host, Fernando Chibuti, that's your Leading the Charge. And today, a special Thanksgiving edition of this Leading the Charge, and an unusual show today. I will be talking about how thankful I am for being part of the Bills Mafia, for being part of Buffalo Ramblings, for being a Bills fan, and also share with you my story about how I became a Bills fan, and my background as an athlete, and so you can kind of understand a little bit about where does all my takes, the feel good and the most of them, a lot of them, bad ones, where they came from, so where they come from, right? So today the episode is a special one about this Thanksgiving. It's not a big tradition. It's not a tradition here in Brazil. It's not even a holiday here in Brazil, but I wish it were, man, because Thanksgiving seems really, really awesome. I've never had an opportunity to share a Thanksgiving table, a Thanksgiving meal, or even Thanksgiving Thursday of football with friends live, right, in a stadium. I've never had this opportunity to go to the US and to watch the Bills live and to share a Thanksgiving like this. But I hope it can happen at some point. And that's what this Leading the Charge will be about today. Please hit the like button, subscribe to Buffalo Ramblings. And I really appreciate all of you that have been alongside me during all my career, writing texts and podcasting, broadcasting since my early days at Cover One and now with Buffer One, please. Hit the like button, subscribe. Remembering, this episode is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all the main podcast aggregators via Buffer One, please. So without further ado, let's move on. I want to start talking a little bit about myself so you can know me a little bit better, and feel free to share your stories, to share your backgrounds in the comment section on YouTube. It will be really nice to know you a little bit better. After all, the Leading the Charge, I always tell it, it's a show made from a fan to the fans all over the world, right? The Leading the Charge has reached people in America, in other parts of the world, in Latin America, in Brazil especially. We have the first show really dedicated to fans in Latin America, especially in Brazil, in Portuguese-speaking countries, every Sunday in Portuguese. So it's been really a blast to be able to produce, to create content for all Bills Mafia everywhere. And so I'm Fernando Chimuji, and I'm a former athlete. I played football. What people say are the real football all over the world. Sorry, American friends, but that's how the world thinks, right? So I'm a former soccer player. I played professionally for 16 years here in Brazil. if I take into the consideration, into the count, all my years since the academy, since when I really left my home to start playing and preparing to be a professional athlete, it goes past 20 years. I left my house as a 13-year-old kid, following a dream, starting to become a professional soccer player here in Brazil. I believe here in Brazil, today it continues to be, but back in the day it was even bigger how every kid desired and wanted badly to be a soccer player, and with me it wasn't different. And I really dedicated myself a lot. I played as a goalkeeper, or how do you say in America, as a goalie, right? And I left my house in the south of Brazil, in the city of Blumenau, Santa Catarina, to go to northeast of the country, to Salvador, Bahia, where I could play for Vitória. It's a first division team. And back in the day, nowadays they are not in first division, but they usually are in first division. They just won the second division and got the promotion back to first division here in Brazil. It's a traditional Northeast team. And back in the day, they had the best academies in Brazil, the best soccer academies in Brazil. That team gave me my best experience as a soccer player, the best experience overall, even considering my pro career, when I could win the Brazilian championship with Vitória, the Nike International Premier Cup. I even have the medal here, right? The Nike International Premier Cup. It was the Brazilian championship back in the day, under 15. And we also could qualify for the World Championship in the South America tournament. And we played the World Championship in Barcelona, and I had the opportunity to play in the Camp Nou. And a shout out to my friend Anthony Prohaska, big time Barcelona fan. I had the opportunity to play in the Camp Nou, and play against Barcelona there. And back in the day, a little kid called Iniesta killed us, and we lost 2-0 in the semifinals. But it was a great experience where I could face Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and other big time clubs in that World Championship. It was really fun. I became a professional as a 19-year-old in Grêmio, another Brazilian big club in the first division. That's the club who Ronaldinho was formed, right, as a player. And that's where I became a professional. But after leaving Grêmio, I played for minor teams I played also for Santa Cruz, another big team, traditional team, but that isn't in the first division anymore, and played for lower division teams, okay, for 16 years professionally. So despite not playing football, I've been through a lot of the dynamics that pro athletes are nowadays, and living in locker rooms, living with travels, hotel, teammates, daily routines. And so I've been able to amount a good experience, a lot of experience about how things happens in sports. And during this process, I became a Bills fan, and you're probably talking, what does it have to be with the Bills? And my passion for football started when I still was a young kid in the 90s, and my dad got me for the Children's Day here a Super NES, right? And back in the day, my dad used to work for a big company here in Blumenau, and he was sent to America to check some machines and a business trip to America for his company. And when he came back, he brought me a Super NES as a Children's Day gift, right? But man, it's crazy to think about, because back in the day, people here in Brazil or here in Blumenau had no idea about Super NES. They were like, no, there isn't a Super NES. What are you talking about? The only video game is a NES or a Mega Drive. And I couldn't buy games for my Super NES. Luckily, I had Super Mario to play in the early days because I couldn't find any games for Super NES. And when finally the games started to arrive here, Super NES games started to arrive here, the first game that arrived and was available to for rent, because we used to rent games, right, was Madden. So I was totally, I couldn't stand playing Mario anymore because it was all that I have played for a year, probably. And then Madden, I saw that Madden thing for a rent, right? And I was like, whatever, that's the only thing I can play right now. So I started to rent that Madden video game, having no idea about how to play the game or what I was supposed to do. I used to play that game with my cousin, and we had a lot of fun hitting each other, but that's the only thing that we could do, right? And we had no idea about what was going on. And back in the days, the games in English, I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And my only contact with football back in the day was through the Super Bowl, because that was how I could see in the early 90s. The Super Bowl was the only televised game back in the day here. And luckily, the Bills were every year on the Super Bowl back in the day. And I started to see that charging buffalo that I'm wearing here on my chest right now, and fell in love with this logo, right? I fell in love with this logo, with the colors, the uniforms, and with a guy running around people and make them look foolish, right? I love Thurman Thomas from the get-go, man. One of the things that I can remember is about Thurman making defenders look silly and touching the ball a lot and running around madly, and I fell in love with that. So that's why I started to root for the Bills back in the day, looking at them, watching them in the Super Bowls, and falling in love with the logo, falling in love with Thurman. And luckily, I was too young and I didn't know the game enough, so I couldn't really feel sorry for the wide right kick. I actually didn't even watch the game until the end to see what happened in the end. It was really late in the night, I remember, and I couldn't. The only thing I remember is watching the result next day and seeing that the Bills didn't win. But I wasn't too invested yet, and I really didn't suffer back in the day with this, right? And then could see the next few years the Bills getting to the Super Bowl again, and I was already a Bills fan and kept rooting for them ever since. And I wasn't really aware about where I would be starting to put myself into, because, man, I root for a tough team to root for him, Brazil. Trust me. They just blew out a 14-point lead in the Brazilian championship. They don't win since 1995. And it's called Botafogo. And this team has a logo with a star. Okay? This is Botafogo's logo, right? And I have a friend of mine who started to watch football back in the day too. And he's crazy. He always talks about, he's mad at me. He's crazy about how I didn't become a Cowboys fan. He's a Cowboys fan, and he's like, come on, why aren't you a Cowboys fan? Because of the star, it had everything in common with Botafogo. It was an easy choice for you. But man, I was, since the first time I saw the Charging Buffalo and Thurman Thomas, I couldn't really root for another team, and used to play with the Bills in Madden, and that was my first contact with this sport.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
So growing up, I continued to play Madden. I started to understand the game through Madden. And always following the Bills the way I could. Like when internet started to be a thing here in the early 2000s or late 90s, I remember logging in on the Buffalo Bills website and watching the game's results, the stats. And looking at the photos of the game, my highlights were looking at the photo galleries. It was crazy, man, because I couldn't really watch the game, the games, and couldn't really follow it closely. I could see and know about the players and stats and things were through Madden. And thankfully, back in the day, they used to do a great job with stats and everything related to the team. And via the statistics, websites, box scores, photos, I followed the Bills the way I could. And I remember those early 2000s, I had some, I don't really remember a lot about the late 90s. And again, thankfully, for not following closely enough and not being able to watch live the Music City Forward Pass. But the early 2000s were when I really played a lot of Madden and tried to follow it closer, follow the Bills closer, watch as the 2000s started to go on. There were more possibilities to watch games and to start watching games. So I remember after those Super Bowl years, the teams that I remember mostly, the early 2000s, I remember Sean Bryson, then Travis Henry. I was a big, I still am a big Eric Moltz fan. For me, the best wide receiver ever that wore a Bills uniform. Sorry, Andre, but I really believe Eric Moltz was the most talented, gifted wide receiver the Bills had, and so unlucky to not have the consistency and the quarterback at the quarterback position to give him the ball consistently enough. But the way he could produce with all the instability at the position and big time fan of Emo. And so I remember Travis Henry. I was a fan. Curtis Price, obviously, big time wide receiver too for Emo. And Drew Bledsoe, before Bledsoe, Van Pelt and those hard years with quarterback position, and then the hope with JP Losman, man, I was really excited back in the day when the Bills drafted JP Losman. We had and then Lee Evans. We added Lee Evans, man. I really love Lee Evans too. So I one of the biggest mysteries for me is how those 2000. I don't really remember 2004, circa 2004 or 2006. Bills couldn't make the playoffs with great talent on both sides of the ball, and especially that defense, man. Tecue Spikes, I'm a big-time fan. And London Flasher, what a linebacker duo we had. Big Sam Adams, Lawyer Malloy joining in, and that win in the opening week against the Patriots, one of the biggest memories I have from my teenager years. So that team was really talented, and it's a shame that they didn't make the playoffs, because I love that team. I love that D, and a lot of players that were there, and I really wish they've done more than just winning some games during regular season. And after that era with Kyle Williams, when Kyle Williams joined, I was my first contact. I need to talk a little bit about Kyle because that's my favorite Bills ever. And I even wrote back in the day for Cover One an open letter to Kyle when he retired. And I hope he could, that letter could some way, he could have read that letter some way, because that's my this guy was really important for me, even for me as an athlete, as a professional, because I started to follow closely the Bills in that era, and I was also playing and starting my professional career back in the day. And when Kyle started to be relevant and a team captain, I also started to be a more important player in the teams that I used to play, instead of just a young guy trying to fight for a space on the squad. So I could learn from Kyle a lot of leadership qualities, a lot of good examples. He was a role model in a total different sport. And it was awesome to be able to learn so much from a guy like Kyle, a guy that wasn't supposed to be so good, and how he put in the work, and how he never cared about being seen. You know, he cared about the most important things, working hard, being there for your teammates, leading by example, being a good teammate, being a good husband, a good dad, a good man. So I could learn a lot about Kyle. He was important in that sense, as I played my career alongside his as a Bill. So there are a lot of reasons why he's my favorite Bills ever. And that era was when I really could start watching more games and following more closely. And then circa 2008, 2009, I finally arrived at Buffalo Rumblings for the first time and could start posting on the comment sections, on the forums, and built a great relationship with a lot of people there. Scarecrow was here in the Leading the Charge a few weeks ago, and it was a blast, man, because I finally could meet him personally via video conference, obviously, but finally could put a face on a long-time friend, a big-time friend from long time, in all those forums. And all those guys, Matt Rich Warren, Brian Galliford, man, Pause, Abayard, a legend from Buffalo Ramblings forums, Abayard, and man, a lot. I'm obviously not mentioned Hornell Fred. I'm not mentioned people, a lot of people that I've had the pleasure to meet and talk a lot. João Paulo, another Brazilian guy that I met in a Buffalo Ramblings forum. It was crazy. And he also roots for Botafogo, and he's been on Leading the Charge several times in the Portuguese editions on every Sunday. So Sergeant Major Thor, man, I lost contact with Sarge, and I hope this guy is well. And Sarge, if you are watching this Leading the Charge, man, please text me, send an email or text something at Fernando Shimuji via Twitter or in the comments here on YouTube. It will be a pleasure to talk to you again, man. And so I've made so many good friends at Buffalo Ramblings, and in this Thanksgiving edition of the Leading the Charge, I want to take this time to tell you how thankful I am for being part of Buffalo Ramblings since 2008, 2009, as a guy that used to post some stuff on the forums, and how thankful I am right now for being part of the team, the official team that creates content online on the YouTube channel and on the social media. So Jay Spence, the King, gave me this opportunity. I'm totally thankful for him for bringing me on. Anthony Marino was the guy who always wanted me here producing in creating content, and here I am producing content in Portuguese and in English. So I really wanted to apologize for my English. It's obviously not native level, but I do my best to send my message here, and I hope you enjoy it. So I'm very thankful for that and for Buffalo Rumblings overall, not only the people from inside the Buffalo Rumblings, but thankful for you, the regular Rumbler that just like me in 2008, 2009, posts on the forums or in the comment sections or interacts with us here via chat, right, during our lives, during our broadcast. So I'm really thankful for you. And it was awesome. It was awesome to become a Rumbler and to start talking there. I could improve my English there. I could start learning English. How many times Grammar Police attacked me in those forums and corrected me, right? And I could learn a lot from you. I'm thankful for that, right? And so there I could follow the team closely. And another curiosity, man. I used to hate Fred Jackson, and I know it's blasphemy, right? And I love the guy. I learned to love the guy, but I used to hate him because in the start of his career, as I told you, I still couldn't watch a lot of games, and I could play Madden a lot. And as a teenager, when I started to see that, why Marshall Lynch isn't playing as he should, why he isn't getting so many touches, why is he sharing the backfield with this Fred Jackson guy, why is Marshall Lynch, the first round pick, sharing the backfield with this, I don't know, this 60-something, this 70s overall player in Madden, you know? So that was the first way I learned about Fred Jackson, and I couldn't understand that, and I couldn't watch a lot of the games back in the day, so I was really mad about, just like in the beginning, I was mad about Kyle having more opportunities than McCargo, a first-round pick, right? I started to be mad at Fred Jackson because that was the guy stealing touches from Marshall Lynch, and I was really, really big fan of Marshall Lynch and wanted him to succeed as a first-round pick, right? But when I started to watch the games and interact with Bills Mafia via Buffalo Rumblings and everything and follow it closely, I could understand why Fred was stealing touches from Marshall Lynch and started to fall in love with Fred Jackson, and he's one of my favorite Bills ever too nowadays. So it was fun to grow into a Fred Jackson fan, but it also helped me to start to learn the game better, to start to understand a lot of things better, and to become a more educated fan. And also related to Buffalo Rumblings comment sections and forums, man, the Mario Williams watch, that was an awesome day. That was an awesome day. One of the best days ever, a couple of days ever to be a Bills fan on the internet. Twitter wasn't really a thing. We used it to hang out a lot at Rumblings forums, and man, the Mario Williams watch, it was crazy, refreshing the forums like every single minute, literally, man, refreshing and waiting for more news and following every step of Buddy Nix and Chan Gailey and the guys trying to recruit Mario, and then bringing his fiancée to the town and not allowing Mario to leave. It was crazy. It was a crazy time to be a Bills fan, but it was so fun, and we could have a lot of fun following it, and thankfully the Bills could sign Mario, and it was really a great moment. I believe one of the top-notch moments during the draft, how we could, as a community, as a fan base all over the world, share that moment and enjoy that win for the Bills of being able to sign a premier free agent to the Bills organization. And that's the only Bills jersey I own nowadays, right? Because let's be honest, the jersey are really expensive, and for Brazilian people it's even more expensive with how our money has no value. So as a birthday gift, my mom and my sister they teamed up to buy a jersey for me, and that was a Mario jersey. So that's the only Bills jersey I still own, or I owned all my life. And but it was awesome to get it as a gift from my mom and my sister as a birthday gift, and that was a great time. And then, man, those 2000, early 2010s, 2010, 2011 teams, those teams I could watch a lot, right? I could follow them closely, and that win against the Patriots early in the season, or where Fitzmagic happened. Man, those times were nice, and those teams were easy to root for. And unfortunately, they also couldn't break the drought. And we were really close in 2014, and that's another team that I have, I'm really fond of, and I really appreciate that team a lot. Unfortunately, at 9-7, they couldn't make the playoffs. Doug Marrone wasn't very likable also, but that's one of my hottest takes as a Bills content creator right now, and that's one take that I want to share. Please, Bills Mafia, hit that like button, subscribe to Buffer Ramblings, comment here in comment sections. What's your background as a Bills fan? Where are you from? How did you become a Bills fan? I'm curious about your story, and I will appreciate every comment here, and we'll interact with you. It will be a pleasure to do so. And in this Thanksgiving edition, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving yesterday. And in this Thanksgiving special, leading the charge edition, I'm sharing my background as a Bills fan and as a soccer player, and how I finally ended here talking Bills with you all over the world from Brazil. And so, continuing from one of my hottest takes as a Bills content creator, maybe, is that Doug Whaley wasn't as bad as people want to make him look right now, in my opinion. And proof of that is that 2014 team, a great team, a lot of great pieces, a defense that we haven't been even with McDermott now being a great defensive guy and building nice defenses. We've never had recently a defense like that 2014 Bills. And the only comparable one for me is the 2004, 2005 Takiwi Spikes and London Fletcher led defense. But that 2014 defense, man, with the cold front, love those guys. And people say Marcel Darius was a bad contract. Man, just in hindsight, because you can't say that about that guy. That guy was a stud in his rookie deal. He was dominant. He was an all-pro defensive tackle. I wish we had prime Marcel Darius today playing alongside Ed Oliver. It would be nasty, right? Because Marcel Darius was a stud, and we had Kyle Williams alongside him. We had Mario and prime young Jerry Hughes at the edges. That defense was nasty. The front four was great. We had Nigel Bradham, who people don't talk enough about, one a great Bills linebacker. He was playing lights out back in the day, right? We had Stephon Gilmore, Ronald Darby. Ronald Darby is still out there making plays, and he was a great rookie cornerback for us. Man, we had so many great pieces in that defense. And on the offense, another hot take I have. People hate Sammy Watkins for different reasons. I think it's overreaction. I think he was a young guy. He was probably a little, even a lot, very spoiled, right? As a former superstar at college, right? So when he needed to deal with adversity and with Bills Mafia arguing about him, and a lot of people probably went over the line when they started to say bad things about his family or to attack him personally on the streets when he was sightseeing with his little girl. So it's tough to deal with these situations, but just like I told you, I'm as a former athlete, as a former professional athlete, I can understand also his side, right? And obviously there are some people who say that he didn't work hard enough, but I will tell one thing, if he didn't work hard enough, it just attests how much of a talent Sammy Watkins was, because the guy was a stud coming out. He was as a prospect, he was the surefire number one wide receiver of that class. Just 1 year before, DeAndre Hopkins was drafted out of Clemson, and DeAndre Hopkins was a Sammy Watkins teammate, and he was drafted in the first round, late in the first round. He started playing really well for the Texans, and everybody was like, okay, but the other guy from Clemson that's still at college, that's the real deal, not Hopkins, right? Hopkins is very good, and he's playing great in the NFL, but that other kid that's still playing for Clemson, that guy is the best wide receiver they have recently. And when they decided to trade up for Sammy Watkins, now today we say, oh, it made no sense because we still see Evans out there playing Mike Evans, and we saw the success Odell Beckham Jr. had. Even Kelvin Benjamin had his moments as a Panthers, played well early, and Kelvin Benjamin was a former EJ Manuel teammate at Florida State, so it kind of made sense for the Bills to go with Benjamin, maybe, because the idea was to give EJ Manuel a top-notch target, just like Bean did to Josh when he brought in Diggs. So he traded up for Sammy Watkins. I could understand, obviously, people from Buffalo who followed Khalil Mack closely really wanted him badly, and I can understand that. Probably if I were living in Buffalo and following the Bulls closely, I'd be on the same boat. But here from Brazil, following college, watching the big time games and looking from outside in, man, Sammy Watkins was a no-brainer. And when the Bills got him, I was totally excited. I was really, really excited, really happy. And man, I just wish he didn't have those injuries and those health problems, because when healthy, he was every bit that what he was supposed to be. He was a stud. He was great. He was one of the best young receivers in the game. And unfortunately, he hardly ever could stay healthy, right? And some people say it's because of his working habits. I can't really say that. Never could follow it close enough, or obviously I'm not inside the building to know about his personality. All we have is some people saying some stuff, but we never know. In health, man, it's so unlucky, because when you start having health problems as an athlete, and muscular problems, injuries, those are the worst. Sometimes it's worse than having a major blow. As an athlete in my career, I thankfully never had a surgery, a tough injury that needed surgery. But in my last few years, a goalkeeper, I retired as a 36-year-old. And in my last 2 or 3 years, I had to stay in the building way more than the usual, like not just to practice, but I had to arrive 2 hours early to do a lot of exercises to prevent injuries, extra exercises to prevent injury or to treat some injuries that were nagging. And stay in the building after practices to ice my knees, to ice my calves, especially my hamstrings, my groin muscles. So it was like every single practice I had to do that. It was really tough to do all that treatment to be able to practice, right? Because the problem isn't to be able to play, but to be able to practice every day, to prepare, be prepared for the games. And that was the reason I decided to retire as a 36-year-old, when I couldn't really play comfortably. I was always in pain and also missing time with my family. After all, as I told you, I left my home as a 13-year-old and spent a lot of time away from family. So I felt it was time. But for Sammy Azabil, I really wish he didn't have all those injuries. And he still is one of my favorite Bills wide receivers ever, because the natural talent. And man, I was a big Steve Johnson fan, and that's another reason why I'm thankful for Buffalo Ramblings, because via Buffalo Ramblings, I had the opportunity to bring Stevie Johnson here to the Leading the Charge and to talk to a long-time idol, a long-time role model, a guy who I admired and could watch a lot and root for a lot. And I was even a bit starstruck here in the Leading the Charge talking to Stevie, but it was a great talk, and I could talk to him after the show and stay in touch with him. And he has some great ideas. That guy is a true has a great look for business. He wants to help the community, to build mafia, to take it everywhere. He's a great guy, and I'm so thankful for being able to have a relationship now, with even from afar, with a guy who's I admire for a long time, and it happened through Buffalo Ramblings. So, and after watching Stevie for so long, man, to draft Sammy and to have that kind of talent, it was also awesome. It wasn't an easy guy to replace for me, with the way Stevie used to play for the Bills and how important he was. And Sammy had the talent for that. Unfortunately, the injuries took out our opportunity to see the best of Sammy, and it was unfortunate. But to close this line of thought here, I don't see Whaley as a bad GM like some people want to believe. And people say, oh, that roster was in bad trouble with the contracts, but that 2014 team, man, it was really close. It was really close. And I always say, if AJ Manuel were Josh Allen, right? If it were Josh Allen in AJ Manuel's place, that team could be a Super Bowl contender, because that defense was for real. We had talent on the offensive side of the ball. Unfortunately, AJ didn't pan out, but when we drafted AJ Manuel, the things that Waylon and Nix looked at AJ were pretty similar to what being looked at Josh, like from the good guy standpoint, a guy that you can trust, a guy who's a nice leader, a guy who's a good man. AJ Manuel was a great guy, right? And worked hard, did his best, even dealing with the benching and all the situations that weren't totally fair to him. But that guy was a nice guy and an athlete that worked hard and could have been different his history. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for AJ, but it was paired with the talent. It's enough for Josh Allen, thankfully. And if it were Josh in AJ's place, or in Orton's place in 2014, because it was Orton the starter from week 4-1, man, that team could have gone all the way. I have this take in my mind, and nobody can take it out from me. So I don't see the Whaley project as a bad one. And if we had some bad contracts, right, when after Whaley was gone and McDermott took over and Bean took over, how about our situation right now? Because Bean built a roster to win it all. We have Josh, but if those Bills can't go to the playoffs, and if at some point, and I don't believe McDermott will be fired in this next offseason, even with the Bills missing the playoffs, I don't believe it will happen. But if the Bills decide to move on after next season from McDermott and maybe from Bean too, man, the cap situation isn't that wonderful, right? We have some contracts that, for example, you can trade Stephon Diggs right now. And obviously, there is a lot of rumblings about, oh, Diggs want to leave. And I really don't believe them, because Diggs himself has been on record saying that it makes no sense. And he knows the contract he signed. He knows that contract isn't tradable right now. So even if, but if you try to move on from McDermott, from Bean, and let's suppose Diggs decides to leave or he wanna leave, you can't move on from that Diggs contract without taking a major hit. And with Josh Allen on the team, this build can't go in a full rebuilding mode. All you can do is retool the roster. So there are some contracts, Von Miller, other contracts, that are hard to get out for. And with all this restructuring that has happened recently, right? This roster isn't really easy to turn around like McDermott did when he took over, and after Whaley left and Bean took over. So the situation is kind of similar to 2014, my opinion. But now we have a franchise quarterback, and it makes all the difference in the world. So that's why I need to defend Whaley in this thankful, in this special Thanksgiving edition of the Leading the Charge. And that's one of my hot takes as a Bills content creator. So, and after this drought, right, we finally had the McDermott era, the Bean era, that I'm thankful for, because I finally could watch the Bills playing winning football and understanding the game. I finally could put it all together, right? The last time the Bills had made the playoffs, I had no clue about what was going on, or I was starting to understand the game, but I couldn't really watch all the games and follow it closely. So ending the drought was awesome for me. And that scene of Kyle Williams hugging his boys, man, it gets me every time. And that scene is awesome. And that represents for me what Bills Mafia is all about and what it means to be a Bills fan, be part of Bills Mafia. We are a family. And man, that scene of Kyle hugging his children, his sons, it's awesome for me. It shows like a long time Bills fan represented in Kyle hugging the new Bills fans that never seen the team in the playoffs, and finally realizing that, okay, after all that hard fights and the hard work and believing and trying hard year after year and not succeeding, you finally made it. So I was very, very happy for Kyle, and it kind of showed us, kind of represented us that moment, in my opinion. So really thankful for that too, and thankful for Coach McDermott, Brandon Bean, the work they have done, and how this team has came through. Unfortunately, the 13 seconds games 2 years ago, and it was a difficult situation to deal with. A scar that every Bills fan still have, and that raised some questions about, okay, will Coach McDermott be able to lead us to a championship? It looks like we have it all, but some mistakes, some repeated mistakes, and man, I wish I didn't have those questions about McDermott. But with how this season has gone so far, and deciding to fire Ken Dorsey, and I don't know, man. I sometimes question if McDermott lost the locker room, and then I see, after this win, Josh Allen talking great stuff about McDermott. And for me, watching the last game, it's obvious that McDermott hasn't lost his defensive guys. his defensive guys plays hard for him. They play hard for him. And the defense played the way if you've been listening to Leading the Charge and if you've been following me closely, you know that I wasn't in favor of firing Dorsey, and I was of the opinion that as soon as the defense could play a little bit better, the offense would be in a better situation. And it just happened that, unfortunately, the defense started to play better in one of the worst offensive games of the season for this offense and for Josh Allen, and that was a game that Dorsey was fired. But right in the next game, we saw some good wrinkles from Joe Brady, but the offense continues to be Ken Dorsey's offense. It continues to be the same playbook, and obviously with Coach Brady trying to implement and change a little of this, the stuff that he believes he got to change. But even with Dorsey, we saw him changing from week to week. So it's not like the only time a change was made was after Dorsey was fired. Because I pointed it out here, after the Jaguars game, okay, I was of the opinion that, okay, Gabe dropped the third down conversion, Knox dropped another third down conversion, important ones that killed drives. You don't have the weapons to... enough weapons to trust, and you gotta feed Diggs. And in the next game, the Bills fed Diggs a lot, right? A lot in the next game. And then people started to say, no, the Bills need to play more under center and more play action because that's where Josh is succeeding, the best stats, the best production, and spread the ball around. And next game, the Bills use it a lot of play action from under center, and Dorsey called Josh Allen threw passes to 9 different targets. So the Bills tried to run a little bit more. So every bit of the things that people were complaining and asking for Dorsey, he was trying the next week. It looked like he was paying attention to the social media, but obviously he was looking at the same things we were. Nowadays, we were very educated as a fans. We have a lot of sources, a lot of people doing great job analyzing tape. We have Scarecrow doing so here for Buffalo Rumblings. We have the Cover One guys doing a great job, led by Eric. And so we can understand a lot of the things that are happening and what's needed, have educated opinions about what's needed. It's not simply fire that guy like some people always want to make it. But so Dorsey was also adjusting, right, and changing. And it's normal to expect Brady to try to adjust and change some stuff. I don't even think McDermott really wanted to fire Dorsey, but it was after a game that something needed to be done, unfortunately, in that situation. And Dorsey was the next domino to fall. So we never know about how much McDermott is being held accountable by Terry Pegula. We don't have this information. I think as fans, we look at the situation and tend to think like, oh, Pegula he doesn't care. He doesn't. Nobody holds Coach McDermott accountable, but it might be a big lie, and maybe McDermott is feeling like, okay, people are trying to look at me, the Pegulas, Terry Pegula especially, they're starting to ask me some hard questions to answer, and I need to give him something, right? So the change at the offensive coordinator, the first signs were good. I don't think the offense was really great in the beginning against in our last game against the Jets. That Jets defense was a difficult one, a hard one to deal with, but the Bills could score 3 field goals. And then in the 4th trip to the red zone, a touchdown, a lot of similar stuff, including the touchdown mesh concept that Dorsey used a lot. But in the second half, Josh hit a big play, one that he's missed recently. He had opportunities and didn't take advantage of those big plays. He took advantage of that against the Jets, and even better, he got some yards after catch. It's a big, big difficulty for the Bills offense, and finally Shakir gave him one of those roles that I've been on record demanding for a long time. I see Patrick Mahomes throwing 10 yards lengths. I see Tua throwing 10 yards lengths that becomes 80 yards touchdown. Josh Allen never gets those. And finally, Shakir gave him one of those, and it was great to see. So I believe that with the signs that the new signs from signs of life from this offense, and with the way the defense still believes in McDermott, I want to believe that McDermott, yet again, he could control the fire inside the locker room. Because when a team that's supposed to win it all, like the Bills, starts to lose so many games like they've been doing this season, and they start to implode, man, it's time to see how great of a leader your head coach is, and if he can really, if the players continue to believe in what he's telling them and what he's proposing them game plan wise and mentality wise, or if the coach lost the locker room and the guys are it's bull crap, it doesn't matter, and I don't believe this guy anymore. We saw guys like Quentin Spain tweet when Dorsey was fired, it's the wrong guy to be fired. So obviously there were, you had a big roster in football. It obviously there were players that left the Bills roster and in a bad mood with McDermott and the guys from the coaching staff. But it happens. You can't really make every single player in the locker room happy every time. But when I see a rebound game just like this against the Jets, and how the players are interviewed and talk about the coach after the game, you kind of see that, okay, the defense guys still believe in him. Josh, it seems, still believe in him, still support him. It's hard because Josh always says the right things to the media, and you don't know what does he think. A red flag for me was Diggs in his interview, because when asked about if he agreed and what was his opinion about Dorsey's being fired, he said, does it matter? Like, I won't say what I really think about it. That's the message that I got from Diggs. And he was like, it doesn't matter. I even disagreeing, I will continue to work hard and to do my job, right? So I get what Diggs said. It was nice from him to say those kind of things, because it's true. If he says, no, I didn't like it, or I'm not on board with it, what good it would do for the team? It wouldn't do any good for the team. So he just said those things and kept working hard, and unfortunately he didn't have a good game last game with some drops, but I hope he can rebound big time against the Eagles, because the Bills will need it. We'll need him playing at his best level, and I like his mindset, and it's easy to understand why Diggs isn't maybe 100% happy with McDermott, since that I'm concerned comment from the head coach when he had, they weren't really on the same page after talking it in the morning, and then Diggs not practicing that day. So I can understand a little bit of trouble between McDermott and Diggs, but it doesn't seem like it's a big deal right now. And the Bills have a great opportunity to rebound, man. This game against the Eagles will be big time important, not just because the Bills got to win most games possible right now, but also because it's such a morale boost game the Bills have right now, an opportunity to beat a Super Bowl team, right? A team that went to the Super Bowl last season and that just won in the last week against their Super Bowl opponent from last season. And the Bills can go to their home and win a game there and make a statement, like, for everybody. Like, look, the Bills are back. The Bills figured out the defense. As I said, I expected them to figure out because they invested a lot there. And even with the injuries, McDermott is a defensive guru and he has a lot of pieces. Now with Joseph and Rasul Douglas, who's a great playmaker and he can make this defense, McDermott can make this defense a top, not a top unit, a top three unit like it was before the injuries, but a top 10, top 15, and creating a lot of turnovers, it's possible. And if the offense is on fire, hitting on all cylinders, it's enough. It's more than enough from this defense. So this year, we don't have a big dog in the AFC. We don't have it in the NFC too. It's wide open. And I really believe it's a good year for the Bills to make the playoffs, no matter how, and to start a new tournament there. And that's the right time to start playing better, to rebound. And I believe it's possible. So winning against the Eagles right now in Philadelphia and then going to the bye with this morale boost and recovering your guys and making everybody see that the Bills are back, I think it's a huge game. And I really expect the Bills to do well in this game and to play a great game there. And I'm hopeful, I'm confident the Bills can win this game, and I really believe so. And so we will see, man. That's what I think about this week's game. But mainly, that's why I'm so thankful for being here, doing the Leading the Charge for Buffalo Rumblings, for being a Rumbler, for being part of this great, great community at Buffalo Rumblings, but also from the even bigger community that is Bills Mafia. I could share a little bit of my background. I could share a little bit of my career and especially how I became a Bills fan and how thankful I am for being so a Bills fan and doing this job for you. Please hit that like button, subscribe, share, comment in the comment section on YouTube. Please, I want to know your story. I want to know how did you become a Bills fan? Where are you from? And I really appreciate you taking your time, staying with me in this special edition of the Leading the Charge Thanksgiving edition. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving yesterday. I'll be back next Sunday with a post-game show totally in Portuguese, the Leading the Charge for Bills Mafia in Brazil, in Latin America, in Portuguese-speaking countries, and hopefully talking about another Bills win, this time against the Eagles. Thank you so much, Bills Mafia. See you around. Go, Bills.